This morning, America's First News starts right after this. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Closer to a green light. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Wednesday, December 9. Thanks for being with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The Food and Drug Administration says the coronavirus vaccine from Pfizer is safe and effective, opening the door to emergency use authorization.
Another coronavirus relief offer. The White House has floated a $916 billion proposal that would include stimulus checks of $600 per person.
The Supreme Court has thrown out a Republican effort to block Joe Biden's presidential victory in Pennsylvania.
And with Congress struggling to pass spending bills, some lawmakers favor a return of earmarks.
Earmarks were at one point really kind of the symbol of political graft and corruption. There were staffers and lobbyists and members even who were caught in a scandal in the about 15 years ago or so.
Ledge King at USA Today on the potential return of earmarks, which were dismissed more than a decade ago. The FDA says the first COVID-19 vaccine being considered for U.S. distribution met the prescribed success criteria in a clinical study. An outside panel of scientific advisors will now review the FDA report tomorrow, and a favorable recommendation from the panel is expected to be followed within a few days by the FDA granting emergency authorization. Separately, President Trump signed an executive order intended to ensure that priority access for COVID vaccines procured by the U.S. government is given to the American people before assisting other nations.
If authorized, tens of millions of vaccine doses will be available this month, and we'll get it distributed very quickly. We have that all set, and hundreds of millions more will quickly follow. Every American who wants the vaccine will be able to get the vaccine.
Meanwhile, in its report yesterday, the FDA noted that the two-dose vaccine from Pfizer provided benefits even after just the first injection. The vaccine was found to be 95% effective after the second. Meanwhile, results in the United Arab Emirates show that a Chinese vaccine candidate was 86% effective. The U.S. Supreme Court has rejected a Republican request to block President-elect Joe Biden's victory in Pennsylvania. The lawsuit asked that either all the 2.5 million mail-in ballots cast be thrown out, or that the courts erase Mr. Biden's victory and direct the state's GOP-controlled legislature to choose the winner of the state's 20 electoral votes. Also, Republican Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has now filed his own case directly in the Supreme Court, suing Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin for allegedly conducting their elections without following the rules.
Our job is to make sure that the Constitution's followed and that every vote counts. And in this case, I'm not sure that every vote was counted, not in the right way.
He was on Fox News. Officials from the other four states called the lawsuit a reckless attack on democracy. Meanwhile, the Trump campaign has pledged to take a case to the Supreme Court over the election, but has not done so. The case yesterday did not involve the Trump campaign as a litigant. President-elect Biden has outlined a three-step plan for the first 100 days of his administration, urging masks in public, delivering 100 million vaccine shots, and getting kids back to school. Mr. Biden yesterday formally introduced the public health team that will help him navigate the coronavirus pandemic.
They'll lead the COVID-19 response across the government to accelerate testing, fix our supply chain, and distribute the vaccine. They'll work with my economic team because controlling the pandemic, delivering better health care, and reviving the economy go hand in hand.
Mr. Biden said during televised remarks that he will nominate California Attorney General Javier Becerra to serve as Secretary of Health and Human Services. Some Republican lawmakers have questioned Mr. Biden's choice of Mr. Becerra, who is not a public health official, to lead the Health and Human Services Department. Mr. Biden also rolled out a COVID-19 task force led by transition co-chairman Jeffrey Zients, a veteran of the Obama administration. It's 11 minutes after the hour. On this morning, America's First News. Dell Technologies' end-of-year sale is the perfect time to upgrade tech. Save big on the latest computers powered by Intel Core processors for your small business. Don't forget to shop servers, storage, and thousands of top-brand electronics, all with free shipping. Call a Dell Technologies advisor to help you find the right tech for your business needs at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
For the one standing guard, for the eagle-eyed, for the knights in shining armor, and for all those who support them, we are Grainger, your experienced safety partner, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, committed to helping keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com/safety or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. It's getting busy on Capitol Hill as we near the end of the year. The House yesterday approved final passage of a $740 billion annual defense policy bill by a vote of 335-78, far exceeding the two-thirds majority that would be needed to override a presidential veto. Separately, congressional earmarks, once symbols of political corruption and outrageous spending, could be primed for a comeback a decade after they were eliminated. Would this be the wolf watching the hen house again? Maybe not, according to Ledge King, Washington correspondent at USA Today. Ledge, start with the basics. Revisit what earmarks are.
So earmarks are what's known as money that members of Congress can insert into bills for specific projects and specific programs. So, for instance, a road project, or a museum, or money for, an empowerment zone to help small businesses in a depressed area. Earmarks are a way for members of Congress to kind of help their own districts, essentially.
So they got out of hand at one point, it seemed, and Congress put in restrictions, correct? And now they want to lift them.
Yeah, so, I mean, earmarks were at one point really kind of the symbol of political graft and corruption. There were staffers and lobbyists and members even who were caught in a scandal about 15 years ago or so, where Indian tribes were trying to get some help for projects, and they were helped, but improperly, and in some cases illegally, with bribes and all that stuff. So earmarks then became, okay, we're going to make them more transparent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then they also had a problem with things like the Bridge to Nowhere, which was an Alaskan project, a project in Alaska, $213 million for a bridge that would serve, a few thousand people. And they became not just symbols of corruption, but also symbols of profligate spending by Congress. All these things that, do we really need this? And why are taxpayers paying for this? And let's end the practice. So they stopped in 2011, and now there's talk about bringing them back next year. One of the issues is, members feel like they don't get what they want without the earmarks. They're trying to help their local districts, and they have nothing to show, or very little to show, when they go back home. So they want to bring them back.
We're speaking with Ledge King, Washington correspondent at USA Today. He's written a piece about Congress considering the return of earmarks to ease gridlock in 2021. So I think we all kind of have rolled our eyes traditionally thinking about this, but this time at least there seems to be an effort to kind of ensure legitimacy. Explain what rules they might place on each other.
So sort of three major things. One, you have to make sure the person who is proposing the earmark is identified. In the past, you'd have one member proposing something for another member secretly to get around, disclosure. The second is you have to give it to a nonprofit entity, like a local government, like a nonprofit museum or an organization like that, as opposed to a government contractor who could then turn around and give you, a campaign donation, a quid pro quo. And the third thing is the member has to show that they do not have any financial interest in the project being funded, so they can't profit.
And then how much actual money per year would be even available for something like this?
Well, what they're talking about is 1% of total discretionary spending. That is what Congress can can, you know, has the money to play with, which is about $1.3 trillion. And so that means about $13 billion that they can give. And that can fund a lot of projects. I mean, most of these projects are 100,000, 200,000, you know, road projects or, you know, local museums or buildings. So the money can go far.
So what are the odds that something like this passes?
It looks pretty good. I mean, I think one thing that I'm hearing, especially from moderates, is people who want to make deals in the next Congress. So much legislation is bottled up because members don't have a lot of incentive to vote for broad things that they may object to, you know, in one way or another.
Nice. Ledge King, Washington correspondent at USA Today. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
President-elect Joe Biden has laid out his plan to fight the pandemic during his first 100 days in office, saying his administration would vaccinate 100 million people, push to reopen schools, and strengthen mask mandates. Biden yesterday formally introduced his public health team.
They're going to be ready on day one to spare not a single effort to get this pandemic under control so we can get back to work, get back to our lives, get back to our loved ones.
Biden also picked Congresswoman Marsha Fudge of Ohio to lead the Housing and Urban Development Department and Tom Vilsack, the former Agriculture Secretary, to fill that role again.
Number two.
President Trump celebrated the expected approval of the first U.S. vaccine for the coronavirus as the White House works to instill confidence in the distribution effort.
We're just days away from authorization from the FDA, and we're pushing them hard, at which point we will immediately begin mass distribution.
A vaccine from Pfizer is expected to soon receive endorsement from an FDA panel.
Number three.
The Supreme Court has rejected Republicans' last-gasp bid to reverse Pennsylvania's certification of Joe Biden's victory in the electoral battleground. The court, without comment, refused to call into question the certification process in Pennsylvania. The Army says it has fired or suspended 14 officers and enlisted soldiers at Fort Hood, Texas, and ordered policy changes to address chronic failures of leadership that contributed to a widespread pattern of violence, including murder, sexual assault, and harassment. In a sweeping condemnation of Fort Hood's command hierarchy, Army Secretary Ryan McCarthy fired three top commanders and suspended two others.
The tragic death of Vanessa Guillen and a rash of other challenges at Fort Hood forced us to take a critical look at our systems, our policies, and ourselves.
The actions come after a year that saw at least 25 soldiers assigned to Fort Hood die due to suicide, homicide, or accidents. More chaos in the world of college football with the game now called off. Citing a rising number of COVID-19 cases in its program, Michigan has canceled its annual showdown with Ohio State as college football lurches toward the end of the season without one of its cornerstone rivalry games. The season-ending grudge match won't be played for the first time in 102 years.
Man. Instead, however, Jennifer will be watching a rebroadcast of the Rutgers men's basketball victory over Syracuse last night.
I can't wait to get home and watch it.
Thanks, Jen. Today, I'm here with Josh Hunt, Executive VP and Chief Business Development Officer at the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Josh, if I wanted to start a new business, what is it that makes Michigan so attractive?
Yeah, if you want to start a business in Michigan, we have unbelievable assets here in Michigan for our entrepreneurial community as well, in terms of opportunities for growth through access to capital, services, great universities, and a talented workforce that can grow through those startup businesses here in Michigan. We've seen examples of companies grow from an idea to over $1 billion valuation, companies like Duo Security and others that have grown here through the strong ecosystem of support that we have for high-tech startups here in the state.
To hear more of this interview with Josh Hunt from the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, go to thismorningwithgordondeal.com and click on the MEDC microphone. That's thismorningwithgordondeal.com and click on the MEDC microphone. Glad you're with us. Whatever your feelings on the Affordable Care Act, it's likely even more people will at least be considering getting their coverage through the federal health insurance marketplace or state exchanges. The open enrollment period for next year's health insurance opened November 1. Katie Hill, executive editor at Millie, has a look at things you need to know whether you're a new or returning customer. Katie, a lot of people lost jobs and therefore coverage during lockdowns.
Yeah, an estimated 14.6 million Americans lost employer-provided health insurance due to the pandemic. that could change, right? And as people find jobs, that's a lot of people who are now going to be looking at these, the federal health insurance marketplace, maybe for the first time, and trying to figure out their plan from there.
Okay, so what to keep in mind?
Yeah, first of all, so enrollment period ends in December 15th in most states, but not all states. So 36 states, it ends December 15th. There's a bunch of states that now have extended open and unenrollment periods. So it depends on where you are. So it's worth looking at your state and figuring out when the deadline is. It may be December 15th, but it may not be.
All right. And this process can be intimidating, I'd imagine, right? I mean, can you find help?
Yeah, and you should, right? Not you should, but if you're confused by it, you can find help. There's brokers, there's navigators. You're not paying them. The broker, for example, works on commission, but they can really help you navigate this because there's a lot of plans, and what works well for you might not work well for someone else. So, yeah, it can, excuse me, it can be worth using a broker for this.
Okay, so what about on the choices front? This was kind of point number two in your story.
Yeah, super interesting, and I think this will surprise people, that some of you may have more choices in 2021. So some of the major providers, United Health Group, for example, which had dropped out, are going to be returning to the marketplace. So that means for some of you, you'll actually have more choices than you did before.
All right. And then with regards to Medicaid, something worth exploring as well.
Right. So if someone who lost their job, maybe even if they were earning six figures, 2 years ago or something, if you are earning almost nothing now, you may qualify for Medicaid, and that's worth looking into. Now, you have to earn very, very little, right? It's 133% of the federal poverty level, so that's about $26,000 for a family of four. It's really low, but it's worth looking into if you're not having any income coming in.
All right. We're speaking with Katie Hill, executive editor at Millie. They've got an important story running entitled 10 Things You Need to Know About the Affordable Care Act in 2021. So back up one second, because before you referenced speaking with maybe a broker or a navigator for help. What's the difference between those two?
So the broker is going to work on commission, so they're going to get paid by the plan that they sign you up for. The navigator, if you're going through the ACA and you're on one of the marketplaces, they're also called a sister, and they're just an impartial person who can help you choose something. They're funded by government grants, whereas brokers are paid on commission.
Thanks, Katie. Katie Hill, executive editor at Millie. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. If this 2020 holiday season feels like it's been a long time coming, make it worth the wait. Send the perfect gift and bring families together for a delicious Omaha Steaks holiday feast. The Deluxe Grillers Assortment is my current favorite. Features Omaha Steaks Butcher's Cut Filet Mignons. Also included, tons of incredible meats, amazing sides, and famous Omaha Steaks desserts. Right now, you can get this mouth-watering package plus four free burgers and a free digital meat thermometer at an exclusive price. Go to omahasteaks.com. Enter the code Gordon in the search bar. Omaha Steaks isn't just steak, it's a steakhouse delivered to your front door. I've been grilling their meats for years. And don't forget, when you order the Deluxe Grillers Assortment, you'll also get four free Omaha Steaks burgers and a free digital meat thermometer with my code Gordon at omahasteaks.com. It is a deal you will not find anywhere else. Visit omahasteaks.com and type Gordon in the search bar to shop gourmet grill packs today.
The top national stories with the context to make sense of it all. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday, December 9. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka, some of our top stories and headlines. The FDA says the Pfizer vaccine is safe and effective. Supreme Court denies a Republican effort to throw out Pennsylvania's election results. The House is expected today to vote on a one-week extension of funding to keep the federal government open, avoiding a Friday deadline, while negotiations continue on a comprehensive spending bill. Ravens over the Cowboys in Tuesday night football, and the Chicago 7-year-old raising money for PPE by making and selling bracelets. That story in about 20 minutes. U.S. employees started heading back to the office in greater numbers after Labor Day, but that pace is stalling now. Peter Grant, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says the trend is delivering another blow to economic recovery hopes in many cities. Peter, how so?
Well, when you think about it, the cost-benefit analysis of going back to the office now has greatly changed since the increase of COVID cases happened. People just simply don't want to take their life in their hands when they go to work, And even though businesses and landlords have spent lots and lots of money on making the office place safer, the risk factor has certainly increased, and that's making everybody decide to go back home.
Now, what's going to happen then? You can't have all these skyscrapers in the big cities, for example, going half occupied or less.
It's very bad for the cities, very bad for the small businesses that depend on the office crowds. They've been trying to tough it out, and they're just going to have to tough it out longer. Look, a vaccine does appear to be on the horizon. People are hoping that when that happens in the months to come, there'll be something of an all-clear signal that will be given, and people will go back, and things will begin improving. The big question is whether we can tough it out until then.
Yeah. I think there was at least one executive or observer in your story who referenced the word collaboration. But being able to do that, I guess, physically in person is just advantageous versus, say, a Zoom call.
Exactly. And there is a big debate in the office world right now about the extent to which people will go back even after the all clear signal sounds, because for a lot of people, working at home has been successful and they even like it more. But your point is a very good one. There is a lot being lost by not being in the office. There's the collaboration. There's the mentorship. There's just the gossip, the water cooler conversations. I mean, those parts of everyday office life are not insignificant. And I believe it will begin drawing people back to the workplace.
We're speaking with Peter Grant, reporter at The Wall Street Journal, and he's written a piece entitled "A New Setback for Big Cities as Return to the Office Fades." All right, so name some of these cities that you looked at or got some data from, Peter.
Sure. We relied heavily on a company called Castle Systems, and this is a company that provides those card keys that you swipe through the turnstile. And so they have very good data on exactly how many people are swiping into work. They have been tracking the 10 largest cities in the U.S., and those include cities in the Midwest, but also cities like New York and San Francisco, which are being hit the hardest. And not surprisingly, the percent of the return rate is much lower in places like New York and San Francisco, where it's down 15%, even less than that, than it is in a place like Dallas, where people are commuting to work and there's less risk taking place by traveling on the public transportation systems.
Mm. So we often think of these big cities and fewer crowds, and the trickle down from that, as you point out in your story, these restaurants and other shops that kind of thrive or need these people, right, teeming in the cities.
They are getting absolutely clobbered. I took a walk around Midtown New York a couple weeks ago and went into the businesses that I used to frequent for after hours drinks, mm-hmm, or during for business lunches, which would be packed, and there's just hardly anybody there. They've sent most of their workers home. They're operating on a skeleton staff, and they've cut deals with their landlords, but still they're just squeaking by. I don't know how much longer they can hold out.
What else stood out to you as you were pulling all this together?
I think there are some systemic concerns with the whole financial system, because office buildings is the largest class of commercial real estate. There are hundreds and billions of dollars worth of office buildings out there. A lot of them have debt on them. Nothing bad with that. That's kind of how the real estate market works. But the debt depends on certain values, and the values depend on certain rents and certain occupancy rates. If this is prolonged and leases begin expiring, that's going to be putting pressure on the landlords. They're going to start defaulting on loans at a higher rate, and that's going to start having repercussions throughout the financial system.
Thanks, Peter. Peter Grant, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Welcome into Wednesday. Let me throw in a personal acknowledgement here on a serious note. The passing of a talk radio pioneer by the name of Jack Ellery. He was known as the voice of Central New Jersey with 44 years on WCTC AM 1450, one of our affiliates. I had the pleasure of working with Jack in the 90s when I was just starting in radio. I grew up listening to Jack on the Air since he was the guy who read school closings when we had enough snow. You know, he used to read them alphabetically by town name. He'd finally get to the letter M, and he'd say, in Metuchen, the St. Francis School and St. Joseph's High School. You know, and it would just be a party. It was like winning a championship or a lottery. Anyway, he'd been battling Alzheimer's the past couple of years, then got COVID about 2 weeks ago. Equal parts witty, smart, funny, cranky. Sometimes I used to tell him that to his face when we teased each other. He died yesterday at the age of 86, a radio legend silenced. Rest well, Jack. It's 15 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. It is time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, you know, it's that time of year where you think about tipping your garbage collectors, and this is the reason why. An Indiana man whose cash-filled wallet was accidentally thrown out got it back last week after a crew waded through tons of trash and found it wet and smelly near the bottom. Logansport resident Robert Nolte said his wallet ended up in the trash Thursday after he asked a friend to throw out a pair of green camouflage pants that were covered in white paint. After his trash was hauled away, Nolte realized his wallet was missing and that it had been in the discarded pants. At his wife's urging, he called a city code enforcement officer and explained the situation. After first being told that there was no way the wallet could be found, the official worked with a crew from the trash hauler to search for the pants after determining which driver had collected Nolte's trash. They then made their way through 9 tons of garbage dumped on a concrete slab looking for the pants. They eventually discovered them at the bottom of the trash pile with the cash-filled wallet still in one of its pockets, a little wet and smelly, but the cash was still intact.
9 tons of trash they sorted through?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. First, they're like, yeah, there's no way. And then, right. You know what? They give it a try. And they've even the guy who lost the cash even offered the guys there, you know, a reward.
Yeah,
like, look,
yeah.
Here's $100.
Yeah.
And they refused it. They said, They said, no thanks.
Did they really?
We're just doing our job. So that's
I don't know if that's
a very cool part of the
story. I don't know if that's their job. Their job is to collect, not
right.
Sort through looking for your pants.
Well, yeah, just doing a good deed, I guess.
Wow, that's remarkable.
And you've likely heard, maybe even uttered, the mantra, happy wife, happy life, to describe the keys to keeping things upbeat at home. And of course, the opposite can also be true, which could potentially explain why one husband in Italy went on a 280-mile walk following a fight with his spouse. Fox News says the anonymous husband has reportedly become a social media sensation after walking 280 miles from northern Como to southern Fano. To put that in perspective for Americans, it's like walking from New York City to Boston, and then continuing on for 64 more miles.
Jeez.
The stressed spouse was picked up by police at 2 a.m. on December 1st, telling authorities he had averaged about 40 miles a day in the week since he left home. Authorities said the 48-year-old man was lucid, tired, and cold, but couldn't believe how far he had truly wandered. It remains unclear if the couple has since made up. However, the report said that when picking the man up, the wife was asked to pay her hubby's hotel bill and a $485 fine for breaking the country's COVID-19 curfew rules.
Man.
Made for an interesting conversation, I'm sure,
right.
When they finally reunited. She laid out almost $500 for him.
Remember the comedian Stephen Wright?
Yes.
Reminded me of a bit he did once where he said, I told my wife I'm going for a walk. She said, for how long? He said, the whole time. This seems to fit that description.
Yeah, not bad.
280-mile walk. Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Dell Technologies' end-of-year sale is the perfect time to upgrade tech. Save big on the latest computers powered by Intel Core processors for your small business. Don't forget to shop servers, storage, and thousands of top-brand electronics, all with free shipping. Call a Dell Technologies advisor to help you find the right tech for your business needs at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
This year, Michigan businesses have had to adapt, and the Michigan Economic Development Corporation was right there alongside them, helping to connect businesses to new resources, meet new partners, and access the additional capital they needed right from the start. If your business needs support to reach its new potential, the MEDC is available to help in any way we can. Contact us today for customized business assistance at michiganbusiness.org/partnership.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. Here's an unsettling trend. Alcohol abuse among Americans increases the longer they spend time at home and as a result of stress brought on by the pandemic. That's the takeaway from a new study published in the American Journal of Drug and Alcohol Abuse. Researchers from the University of Texas Health Science Center School of Public Health in Dallas did the analysis. The survey found that participants, on average, spent 21 hours a day at home, with 72% of respondents saying they did not leave for work. The researchers found that alcohol abuse among binge drinkers surged by 19% during every week of the lockdown. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The FDA says it has found that there are no specific safety concerns that would stop the agency from approving the COVID-19 vaccine made by Pfizer for emergency use. Career scientists at the FDA analyzed the data from the ongoing Pfizer trial to form their own conclusions about its safety and efficacy. White House vaccine chief Moncef Salawi spoke with Fox.
Within 24 hours, we will be shipping the vaccine, and within maybe 12 hours from arriving into the immunization sites, the first subjects may be immunized, which could happen on Sunday or maybe more likely on the Monday.
Independent experts are meeting tomorrow to advise the FDA on whether to approve the vaccine, which the FDA's analysis says is 95% effective, affirming Pfizer's findings.
Number two.
Deaths from COVID-19 in the U.S. have soared to more than 2,200 a day on average, matching the frightening peak reached last April, and cases per day have eclipsed 200,000 on average for the first time on record. Washington State has extended restrictions on businesses and social gatherings. North Carolina has imposed a 10 p.m. curfew.
Number three.
The House has easily approved a wide-ranging defense policy bill, defying a veto threat from President Trump and setting up a possible showdown with the president in the waning days of his administration. The 335-78 vote in favor of the $731 billion defense measure came hours after Trump renewed his threat to veto the bill unless lawmakers clamp down on social media companies. Trump also wants Congress to strip out a provision of the bill that allows renaming of military bases that now honor Confederate leaders. We now know who found it. A 32-year-old medical student, Michigan native Jack Stuoff, has been identified as the finder of a million-dollar treasure that evaded seekers for more than a decade. A wealthy New Mexico antiquities dealer filled a bronze chest with more than $1 million in gold, jewels, and other valuables and hid it somewhere in the Rocky Mountains, leaving nothing but a cryptic poem he wrote in 2010 as a clue on how to find it. When a lucky searcher found the chest in June, he was not identified. Stuoff has now made his identity public after a federal court order against the dealer's estate would have made his name public. Stuoff found the treasure on June 6th in Wyoming, 2 years after his quest began.
2 years? He's been a med student, no less.
Yeah,
two
who has
years,
time for
right?
this?
When did he sleep? Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes in front of the hour. How about this for skills? Haley Orlinsky has made so many bracelets, looping colorful rubber bands over her thumb and index finger again and again, that she can do it without looking. Fox News says the spunky 7-year-old from Chicago has spent most of the coronavirus pandemic crafting the creations as a fundraiser to buy personal protective equipment for a children's hospital. So far, the endeavor has generated nearly $20,000 for Anne and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital. It all started when she heard news stories about PPE shortages. The money Haley raises pays for masks, goggles, things like face shields and gloves. Her initial goal was $200, which she quickly surpassed, charging $3 per bracelet or $5 if it had an added charm. It's hard for the second grader to grasp how much more $20,000 is by comparison, but she says she knows it's more than the tooth fairy gives. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.